Welcome to the podcast of Justice. I'm Isaac Frisbee.
And I am Charlie Niemeyer.
We are reviewing Justice League of America number 3 and number 4 today. Is that correct?
That is correct.
But first,
we have an email.
Email.
We've got an email. Email.
That song from Blue's Clues.
I know. Oh, I should get that.
Here's the mail that makes me want to wag. Mail.
I am so putting that in the episode once I. Yeah, if I can find it on. I'm sure I can find that on YouTube.
I'm sure you can.
So I just got an email.
By the way, Steve didn't leave because he was on drugs.
That's what I heard.
It's a rumor. It's false.
Yeah, he wasn't high on anything yet.
No, not yet.
Okay, so wow, I just got a whole bunch of emails. None of them for our show though. Okay, our first fan email, which was sent a long time ago. This is from Steve Rogers, and he writes, "Hey, hello, Charlie Steve. And Isaac. Hey, hi, Steve. It's Captain America, you know. Except this Steve has dark hair, but that's all right." And he likes the New York Giants. Crazy. He writes,
"Go Jets!" Hey,
thank you. He writes, "Hey, Charlie and Isaac." Goes, "Hey to the Redskins. Love the show." Or should I say, "I'm sure I'm loving the show" by the time this gets on the air, with a smiley face. Thank you, Steve. This is a classic era, while full of Gardner Fox wackiness and not quite what it would evolve into during the Bronze Age, it does build the foundation for the JLA titles. Should be a fun ride through DC's Silver Age, Steve. Wow. Well, thank you for writing in, Steve. And yeah, when you wrote that, I think we had one episode recorded. Yes. That was August. And yeah, we only had... No. We had the first 3 recorded. That's how long it's been since we last recorded, folks. It is October as we record this. We haven't recorded in 2 months. But our first episode is out, so that's awesome. I don't have anything else about, you know, early on. Is there anything you would like to talk about?
No, I'm just excited to be back and getting back into the grind of recording podcasts again.
All right.
Can I plug my other one? Can I do that?
You have another show?
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay.
Okay. Listen to my other podcast. I only have one other one. It is called The World's Best Podcast. Check out the Superman Podcast Network, Superman homepage, maybe, and check it out. We have expanded our reviews a little bit. We now review Marvel stuff. I know. We just got done reviewing the event. Well, I haven't posted that yet, but we reviewed the Avengers cartoon, which was awesome. It's a completely different side story, but check it out.
Wait. Which one? The first one on Fox Kids or the current
Toon
Disney?
The Disney XD.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Which was excellent.
Yes, it is, and I can't wait for season 2.
Oh, I'm so pumped. And for Ultimate Spider-Man 2, which is coming out on Disney XD as well.
Yes.
Because the rights to Spider-Man expired, which is why we're no longer going to see Spectacular Spider-Man.
That's a sad.
Which is sad, because that was actually pretty good.
I liked it. I have the first season on DVD.
I'm glad that Marvel is bringing it all in together. So that'll be good.
Yes, yes.
And have we talked about your other podcasts?
I don't have any.
Oh, okay.
No. let's see. I have... What the heck do I do? Oh, I've got Superman of the Bronze Age.
Bronze Age.
Which is now a bi-weekly podcast, obviously covering the adventures of Superman of the Bronze Age. Who would have thought? And it is at supermanofthebronzeage.blogspot.com. And then I have just started another show. Now... Just kidding. This is the show. But I am a semi-regular co-host, at least until we get through the radio show, on The Thrilling Adventures of Superman, because Michael Bradley has asked me, kindly asked me, to come on the show and help him talk about, well, the Superman radio show. So I'm only on the episodes where he covers that. But and as of this recording, we've gone through a whopping nine episodes of the Superman radio show. And in fact, we're recording in a couple days for like six more episodes, so that'll be cool. And of course, both of these shows, you will probably be hearing in the promos, probably on our first break. Just thought I'd point that out.
Very cool. Check out our podcasts.
Yay!
You hopefully have lots of free time, and if you have a favorite TV show, stop watching it. Listen to the podcast.
Or just kind of turn down the volume and watch it while you're listening to the podcast. Closed captioning is a good thing.
Yeah. Or you could just turn off closed captioning and project our voices onto the screen.
That would be so awesome. I've always wanted to be one of the Desperate Housewives.
Not me.
Yeah.
I'm more of a I'm a Pan Am kind of guy. So.
Oh, there you go.
I'm just kidding. Yeah. Anyway.
You sound like Christina Ricci.
Ooh, you know, she's cute. She's cute on that show. I like her.
She is kind of cute, yeah.
She
was cute as Wednesday, too, but in a different kind of way.
I haven't seen her in much else. I saw her in that movie where she was the pig chick, and that was good. And before that, it was the Addams Family. I really haven't seen her in a whole lot since then. I know she's done a lot. I just haven't seen her. So.
She was my favorite day for a while there.
Yes, very
when
much.
She was Wednesday. So, but yeah, this is not, believe it or not, this is not a podcast about the Addams Family or anything Marvel or...
Why the crap would that be enjoyable, though, if we didn't, like, have a couple tangents every now and then?
Well, of course, yes.
We actually have something to talk about, and that is the third issue of Justice League of America.
Da-da-da! The original, not the DC new stuff.
Yes, exactly.
We're not going to get to that for... years and years and years down the road.
The title of this issue is The Slave Ship of Space.
Da, da, da.
Da, da, da. I don't know why I'm doing that. I'm high on life. cover artist, Mervy Anderson. Writer, Gardner Fox. Penciler, Mike Sikowski. Inkers, Bernard Sachs. Editors, Julie Schwartz. The villain in this episode is... Kenjar Roe, and as most of the issues so far have started out, the daring deluxury team has all they're all doing their own little thing. You know, Flash is taking the hubcaps off of cars and stealing them and hawking them. Now, you know, one of the things I have to say is that when this started out, I liked, you know, every single issue starts out with them doing, you know, their everyday thing, you know. Like, mm-hmm. It's evolved now into this Justice League where it's like you don't know that they have anything else. If you just read Justice League, you wouldn't know that they had anything else besides the Justice League. And this, it's like, oh, I'm running around in Central City. Oh, there goes my whatever it's called, activator.
You mean the Justice League communicator?
Yes, thank you, the Justice League communicator. I'm horrible with terminology, by the way. And so...
Yeah, that you had a couple words there for the dynamic,
yeah,
whatever's.
I you know, usually it pans out, but that one was just crash and burn. So anyway, it's cool to see them in their home setting, although I have a feeling that we're going to be seeing that a lot. But anyway, it was still fine. It was cool because Flash is like, oh, I need to go see what the distress signal is about. And it basically said, I'm going to super speed around this robber's car and take off his tires.
That's one way to do it.
I thought it was really funny. But anyway, they all, you know, get to the headquarters. And, of course, they get there and they're all immobilized by the space. I don't know what you want to call him. Tyrant? Pirate? I don't know.
He's basically a space pirate.
Yeah, well, he's a space pirate. I mean, yeah, slave ship of space, ship, pirate. There you go. He's also immobilized the entire planet. I'm not 100% sure why he did that, but whatever. Anyway, so he's holding the world hostage, I guess. So he He says, I need you guys to help me out, and you are going to go and defeat three of my enemies. And so basically what he does in this issue is that he splits the Justice League up to go and defeat various enemies. Their names are Hyathis, Crom, and Sayar. Batman and Snapper, who's back again. Nice to see Snapper. He wasn't snapping his fingers when he was racing his car around.
It also looks like he was driving it sideways. It's pretty interesting. Yeah,
I think he was in like a skid or something like that. He's like drag race,
lost. And he's standing up. It looks like while he's man.
Kanjar Ro uses Batman and Snapper to trap Superman. The thing that I love about this though is that every single episode, because this is geared towards kids, the villain always has to explain in explicit detail what he's doing. But in a realistic setting, you know, it would have made it a lot harder for himself if he would have been explaining what he was doing. So Superman's like, you know, he's like looking around for him, and then of course he sees them with his telescopic vision, is basically what it explains. And then he comes to, quote, investigate. And then this is the funny part, is that Superman comes and he says this as he's passing out from the kryptonite gas. I forget his exact phrasing, but it's like, he used the right amount of krypton gas to knock me out.
Yeah, there's just enough kryptonite gas in the room to render me helpless.
He used the right amount of kryptonite gas to... I would have been like, what the...
Exactly.
But,
yeah, it's amazing in the Silver Age how much people could say in a split second it takes to like pass out or walk.
So I mean, you know, it was that was pretty interesting. So you always have someone that has to be immobilized. So why not have it be Superman? I mean, he's like the toughest one of them all.
Yeah, if he's not immobilized, then makes the other guys look like chumps.
So he's passed out. And so then Kanjar Ro sends who's left? Aquaman, Martian Manhunter, Wonder Woman, Flash, and Green Lantern. He puts them on his spaceboat to stop his enemies. Now, what I don't understand is that why didn't he use Superman? I mean, if he's able to control all these other super-powered beings, he couldn't figure out a way to, you know, overpower Superman. And the other thing that was interesting was that, you know, it pointed out that he planned this with, you know, a lot of detail. You know, he thought about how he was going to capture him and, you know, use him or whatever. So Martian Manhunter is sent to capture Crom, and it seems like he does something eerily similar to what he does in a prior issue of Justice League. I don't remember if it was in World's Finest
Brave and the Bold.
Right, Brave and the Bold, where he tunnels underneath this lighthouse-looking thing to knock the guy out. Didn't he do something similar?
Oh, I can't remember. I believe he carried a whole... Oh, you're asking me to remember things. He carried a building to stop Amazo from taking the oldest owl. He sucked an entire aviary off the ground.
Yeah. Okay.
Because Amazo was going to just fly away with it.
Yes.
Yes. And he sucked it away from using his Martian super suction breath.
Right.
Because it can't just be super suction breath, because that's Superman's power.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he tunnels underneath this thing too, and then he captures Crom. So meanwhile, Aquaman and Wonder Woman... Oh, this was something else that was really interesting. He's like, I know that you need water every hour, Aquaman. So he's got like this wand, and it's like he taps the wand on Aquaman. I'm just like, is this some sort of weird religious baptism that he's doing or something like that? What is he doing?
Certainly looks like it, doesn't it?
Bless you, my son, and you know, something like that. But I thought it was just kind of funny, because when he's tapping the wand on his forehead, I don't think they really thought about the artwork in that scene too much, because Aquaman is just like looking forward. It's not like he's looking up going like, oh, thank you so much, water. You know, there was nothing like that. He's just sitting there. It's like, yep, water.
They captured him mid-blink too. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so that was kind of funny. But anyway, Aquaman and Wonder Woman are sent to capture Hyathis. And I don't want to get into too much detail because, I mean, it's basically the same thing. They go back and forth and they fight. And for some reason, the Hyathis reminds me of a cheerleader because of... don't ask me why. It's just... Never mind.
Because it's a girl.
Is well, that it's, it? It's a, I think it's the pom pom looking thing. The hand, the. Never mind. They're fighting that. Never mind.
Okay, so you want me to edit that part out then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Green Lantern and Flash are used to capture Sayar. So after they've captured all of them, they take them back, and Kanjar Rho refuses to free the Justice League unless they promise to not attack him, which is awesome because clearly Kanjar Rho is an idiot. Promise you won't attack me. Okay. Yeah. So, sorry. I mean, it's like the same thing that like with the previous villains, he captures them and, you know, it's like, what was the, who was the guy they went up against that was playing chess with him or whatever? That he had, like, he knew where it was going to go or whatever. What was the, Despero.
Yes.
Yeah. It was kind of like that. It was like, okay, but you're going to sit down and you're going to trust this guy? Well, you're going to sit down and trust the Justice League? They're going to defeat you. And this is where it gets a little weird for me. The Justice League members have all recorded his foes saying his name, and apparently having all three say his name at the same time frees them from Kanjar Rho's power. Sorry, I'm not sure exactly how I'm supposed to like look at that from a critical point of view and say that's really awesome. I mean it was cool in a way, but it was just like, really, you say his name to free yourself? I mean, whatever. So
three times.
They free themselves. They capture Kanjar Rho, and then they go and save Superman before the kryptonite gas kills him. and then they've used his enemy's voices. They don't even know anything about these guys, but they banish him and them to some sort of a meteor planet. And then Green Lantern makes it impossible for them to escape, and that's where it ends. Now, we're assuming these guys are bad, but what if they're good guys that were just fighting for their lives?
Mm-hmm.
Green Lantern has effectively made it impossible for them to escape from this asteroid planet without doing a whole lot of critical thinking, especially since he's like a cop. He is a cop, right?
Green Lantern?
No.
Flash?
Flash.
Flash is a police scientist.
Yeah, well, I mean, you'd think that one of these guys would be thinking somewhat critically, especially Flash being in the police department.
Yes.
So it was kind of surprising that they didn't bring that in there. But, you know, I mean, this one I wasn't as impressed with as some of the other ones because the villain was kind of a throwaway villain, and I don't think the storyline – it was a throwaway storyline. This isn't a character that is terribly awesome or well-recognized.
Yeah, good point. He's not one of their tougher foes.
I have to speak on a relative scale. I mean, someone could be like, oh, well, they were in this issue and this story arc, but, you know, there's arch villains and then there's not. You know, you have throwaway ones where they're in an episode, they're in an issue or whatever. And then you have, you know, your Captain Colds, your Jokers, your Penguins, your Lex Luthers, your Metallos that are going to be in multiple storylines and everybody knows who they are. And this was like not even like a second, maybe a third or fourth string villain. But, you know, I mean, it was enjoyable. It wasn't bad. I think that sometimes they got caught up too much in exposition. One of the things that, you know, as a comic book fan, I think that there was a time when a lot more exposition was required. You know, they wanted to explain what was going on. I think artwork has taken a lot more. I think that the words, not necessarily the story, but the words have taken a bit more of a backseat to the artwork nowadays, because I read these comics and there's so much explanation and plot explaining and everything that it's almost ad nauseum for me. You know, it's like nowadays, like I think the opposing example of this would be, have you ever read All-Star Superman? It's like that. Like Grant Morrison in four or five panels on the first page explains Superman origins, and some of the most profound scenes are ones that don't even necessarily have dialogue.
Yeah, it's definitely changed
You
the
have like these wide sweeping shots, you know, of the farm, you know, or something like that. But it's done so beautifully, and the coloring is done so well that you're just like, wow. And you just kind of sit there and look at it, you know, it's almost like scenery.
Yeah,
This.
back in those days, the it was all about story and the art wasn't that important.
Yeah, half the page was words. And when I was sitting there reading it, I remember my wife saying, wow, there's a lot of words in each of those panels. She didn't say panels because she doesn't read comics books. She said pages, but you know, I'm gonna interpolate her words for her and translate for us comic book nerds. But yeah,
Of course.
I was like, yeah, you're right. It does take up a lot of space. Yeah, I mean, for me, this was like a throwaway issue. It was probably, in my opinion, I think this may have been like my least favorite so far. I don't like saying worst. I like saying least favorite. It makes it not sound so bad. Because I mean, none of them are like horrible. None of them I don't think are bad. It's just that this one, it wasn't as rich in story. It seemed like it was just another issue. You know, I'll remember the Sparrow, you know, one and the Amazo and you know, Starro. Well, those all end in O's, don't they, man? I may have to go back and rethink that.
And then, of course, we got Kanjar Rho.
Kanjar Rho. I wasn't as impressed with this one, so you know, that's my take on it. Well, what were your thoughts?
Well, it wasn't one of the best stories, but I actually thought Kanjar Rho is a pretty well-known Justice League villain.
Is he?
I thought. Well, see,
See, you're more
he's
knowledgeable about this than I am, so I, you know,
yeah.
that's strictly from my own point of view, so.
Yeah, he's well, in addition to even somewhat recently, he's had some appearances even in Superman in Action Comics and in the Justice League books. But he's also showed up in the Justice League animated series. He's been on several episodes, I believe, of the Batman Brave and the Bold show.
Yeah.
He's not seen as one of their more serious ones. He's not Vandal Savage or he's not Starro. He's not Amazo, but and other villains that we'll get to later on. But he is one of their well-known ones, just one of the somewhat easily defeated ones.
Oh, I'm looking at it. I just found a wiki, DC wiki page. I recognize this guy a little bit better. I guess his first appearance, I didn't really recognize that much.
Okay. Yeah, and
He's changed a little bit.
he has changed quite a bit. And yeah, I don't think it was the smartest plan in the world, deciding, we can free you if you just have my name said three times or whatever. But and like you said, I don't know why they got rid of Superman at the beginning when basically at this point, Martian Manhunter was basically Superman with green skin.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's what makes it hard for his character. Just like Captain Marvel. You know, anyone that's remotely similar. Now, back in the day, Captain Marvel did way better than Superman was doing. Is that not correct? At his
Yes,
height.
after a little bit, yes, he was outselling Superman, which is what got DC Comics to
But
notice
since
the
then,
character anyway.
Superman has eclipsed so many other superheroes that anything remotely similar to Superman, now everyone's going to be like, he's too much like Superman. So it's tough. You know, I think that's part of the reason why I think they moved Martian Manhunter recently into, what was it, Justice League Dark, or what are they called? Or
It
no,
was
it was
Justice League Elite,
Stormwatch,
but
right?
yeah, now he's in
Yeah,
Stormwatch.
Stormwatch. Because, you know,
They've also
he's
changed
about
his.
as strong as Superman, and he has a somewhat similar story. He's from a planet, he's the last of his kind, you know, that kind of thing, you know?
They have also changed his power some too.
Have
He
they?
didn't. Well, back in these days that we're covering right now, he's basically Superman with green skin.
That's true. He did
And he
not.
can.
We have they established the telepathic powers yet?
I'm not certain. So far, we haven't seen that yet. All we've seen is that he can change from the Green Martian to, looking like a human so that he can be a detective. But at this point, basically, he was just Superman. He was basically Superman. And nowadays, while he does have several of these powers, they're not played up as much as his telepathy, and they've got more of the shape-changing stuff now,
Right.
instead of just switching between Martian Manhunter form and the John Jones detective form. I mean, he can become all kinds of creatures. He can turn intangible and invisible and drop through floors. I mean, he does all kinds of stuff that Superman can't do. So, they have changed that, but at this point, he was basically Superman light.
Right. Well, really, like in the first issue or two, they tried to keep Superman out of it.
Yep,
But
and
in part
that's
that was
probably.
because it would have just been having two Supermen in one issue, in a single issue.
Which is what we also see here.
Right.
But
So
yeah,
they had to get rid of Superman again.
I thought it was also interesting though that the Sayar Jefin,
Yeah.
all right, no, he's the emperor of the planet Lar, but he totally looks, I mean, even drawn, he actually all three of them do, but mostly him, looks like a guy in a rubber suit, like you would see on, say, Power Rangers or something.
I guess that's true.
Yeah, and I thought that was interesting, but yeah, what you were saying before about the whole police thing at the end, in addition to Barry Allen being a police scientist, like I said, John Jones is a police detective.
Oh, yeah,
Bat
that's right. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
and
Didn't even think
Batman,
about that.
all
Bad
of these guys are,
detective.
I believe,
What are
just
they going
about
to do
all of these
on
guys
an
are.
asteroid? Can they get off of it? Nope. Good.
Yeah, exactly. They don't. It doesn't even look. First of all, it doesn't look like they've left him anything to be on there with, like no food, water, that kind of stuff. Also, I thought it was interesting that if you look at it, Superman literally just created this planet out of a bunch of meteors, and just chunked them together into one big planet-sized chunk. And by the time they drop them off on this planet, it's got foliage. On the last page of the story, there's plants growing on it, which probably shouldn't be happening. And before that, like you said, they do have to get Superman out of it, so they kept him with the kryptonite gas. I guess it's, well, Superman did say it's just enough to keep him helpless, not enough to kill him. If I was Kanjar-Ro and I was going against Superman, and I would go ahead and just, have enough to kill him. None of the others can help him, and he's kind of stuck. So, but I don't know. And of course, Batman is also popular and also has no powers, so he didn't bring him along. And Snapper just snaps his fingers, so he didn't bring him along. But and then he anoints Aquaman, which is interesting.
I like that one.
But yeah, it's of course, as it has has we've been as we have mentioned, and I've actually gotten a couple comments on Facebook, because I had some other people listen to the show too. Like we have mentioned on just about every episode so far, these guys have to go up against the normal Silver Age tropes of every issue. You gotta have your weakness reminded to you. So you've got Martian Manhunter going up against fire. Green Lantern has to deal with yellow. Superman, Kryptonite, all that fun stuff. But I thought it was interesting because I think I'm gonna say this is probably the first time we've actually seen Green Lantern and Flash work together, and it's something that they're gonna end up doing quite a bit in the Silver Age. They're one of those heroes, well, they're not quite Superman and Batman, but before Green Lantern starts teaming up with Green Arrow, he was really known for teaming up a lot with the Flash.
Right.
So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And, but Yeah, that guy in the green just totally looks like a little rubber monster. But and then that's really all I have to say. I thought it was kind of a fun issue. If you can get past all the I really wish Murphy Anderson drew it.
Yeah.
His cover it's kind of like, to me, there's going to be some that probably disagree with me, but it's kind of, to me, like a Silver Age Superman comic where the cover would be by Kurt Swan and the inside art would be either by Wayne Boring or who's the other guy? Al Plastino. Neither one of them was really as good as Kurt Swan at the time. Or, as some people have pointed out, in the Bronze Age, where you would have a Superman issue with the cover by Neil Adams, and Kurt Swan was doing the art. So this, you get Murphy Anderson doing some great art. The boat that they're in looks really cool, and Kanjaro looks tall. And then you get inside, and everyone looks kind of oafish.
Yeah.
But
you know, I think that's one of my biggest pet peeves with comics is when you have someone do the cover art and you open it up. And it happens so much nowadays where it's not even close to them. In fact, it'll suck, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're like, why are you teasing me? Why? Yes. I hate that. Mm-hmm. It's annoying. So I agree with you, you know? Great cover, you know? But you open it up and you're like, oh okay, you know? So, but I mean, I don't think the gap is that bad here compared to some other comics I've read recently.
Get,
you know, some Alex Ross cover or something, and then you'll open it up and you're like, oh, this is complete garbage.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's that too. But what I do like, though, is something I've noticed about the art. I don't know why it is. And it doesn't, for some reason, the art doesn't look quite as good on other people's faces. But they seem to try to put a lot of work and effort into trying to make Wonder Woman look pretty in her face. Everyone else, it's like, eh. But Wonder Woman actually looks like, it's almost like someone else came in and drew her face. If you look at the level of detail you can see in on her face.
It does look off.
And everyone else is, it's almost like, it, I mean, it literally looks like Sikowski just drew the character without a face, and then like the inker or someone else came in and, you know, drew her face. It's kind of weird. I don't know what, it looks so much better than the other art. It's kind of weird. But yeah.
I agree.
But that's all I have to say about it. Did you have anything you wanted to say on the story anyway?
No, I mean, you know, like I said, standard issue for me, but, you know, enjoyable, but, you know, ultimately not my favorite, so.
Okay, real quick, I wanted to point out some of the ads that were actually in this copy of the book.
Mm.
We have mentioned some of the ads in the books before, but this, call it copy, and we're both using the same one, which is really cool. Only has a couple of the ads in it, but they're kind of cool ads. The first ad that we actually have in the book is a DC Comics ad. It says, basically, and it's pretty cool because we're at the beginning of something cool. It's, who is Hawkman? The winged creature that soars high over Earth.
Yeah.
His keen eyes alert. His mighty body tensed to do battle with the forces of evil. Why does Hawkman fight the menaces of the present with weapons of the past and the science of the future? Where does Hawkman obtain his strange power to fly, to talk with birds? For the surprising answers to these baffling questions, read the latest thrill-packed issue of The Brave and the Bold. Because, you see, folks, the same month that this issue came out, the Silver Age version of Hawkman made his debut over in The Brave and the Bold. And that's pretty cool, because, first of all, that actually gets mentioned next issue. But, you know, there's still, you got to remember that this is still pretty early on in the Silver Age, so we're still getting some of the heroes that, you know, you've come to be used to and everything. They are still being introduced. Like we have mentioned before, Flash and Green Lantern here are still very new. In fact, we're going to be covering, I mean, Green Lantern is still on single issue numbers, and Flash has not been in his book for that long. So just got you got to keep that in mind, that just how far back this goes. Now, granted, that just means we're going to be covering this book for a lot longer than most people would care to listen to, but hey, that's what the fun part is.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Other Justice League related books to come out this month is Batman 137. This is pretty cool because Batman is still in the old school Bob Kane kind of Dick Sprang artwork because they haven't upgraded him yet. And Robin's apparently got a new boss named Mr. Marvel, which is just ironic because Marvel's coming out pretty soon. Flash number 118 came out. See, he's only been in there a couple issues.
Right.
And he's fighting the Doomed Scarecrow, which is a guy being held up by a stick in his. Anyway, but it also has a new Kid Flash story. And if you look at the cover, I don't know if you can see the cover on yours, but does it not look like it says special, anew, and then someone just taped Kid Flash story?
It's all mundane.
Do you see that? It looks like someone made it with a label maker and pasted it on the top of the cover. It just says special, anew, Kid Flash story. Anyway, I'm only going to mention this one because he actually makes a has a mention in the next issue of Justice League, but Mystery in Space number 65, featuring another Adam Strange story, as he deals with the mechanical masters of Ron. World's Finest 115, with the curse that dooms Superman, and apparently he's going haywire and is melting the ocean. No, sorry, he's using. Oh, see, this is the date. Okay, remember, folks, man, Silver Age Superman did not have heat vision. His X-ray vision made heat if he focused it enough. So on this cover of World's Finest, his focused X-ray vision is causing the ocean to boil, and Robin and Batman are going to try to stop him by running up to him. Because that's what I would do.
Yes, exactly.
Ooh, Sugar and Spike number 33. That has nothing to do with this though. We have Superman number 143, featuring the great story Bizarro meets Frankenstein. Woohoo!
Running out of stories, guys. Let's do Mummy next week.
I'm guessing that's the Wayne Boring. Fantastic. It also had that. Now, see, this issue also features the Great Superman Hoax, which is not the story I thought it was, so I'm not going to go into that. We have Justice League number 3. I wonder what happens in that. Wonder Woman number 120, where she fights the secret of the Volcano Mountain. And this is weird because apparently there's a flying carpet. And also, Wonder Woman's flying without her plane. So that's pretty cool. This one features Wonder Girl in a little posted ad that doesn't look like it was just taped on at the end. Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane. Yes, I know Lois isn't part of it, but you know, it is a new imaginary story. Yay! Featuring Mrs. Lois Kent as the wife of Superman, and they have some super twins that look like a little super baby and a little super, well, you know, girl, and they're throwing a boulder at each other. While Superman and Lois just sit there at their picnic and have a cake. It's pretty cool. Let's see, we also have Action Comics number 273, which features Superman in the world of Mr. Mixyezpitalik.
Very good pronunciation.
And check this out. Thank you very much. I've been a fan for a while.
Yeah.
And check this out, check this out, check this out. The idea on this is apparently that because he's in the world of Mixyezpitalik, Superman, well, he's trying to get Superman to leave. So, as shown on this cover, he has to get Superman to say Namrepus to disappear. So that's pretty cool, because it totally reverses everything that ever happened with them. Adventure Comics number 281 features Superboy getting new parents. For some reason. And it's not just because he's decided to. He's being reassigned new parents by a court of law. So that's interesting. Also, they're still old people. It's pretty cool. Again, Brave and the Bold 34 has the first adventure of Hawkman. As everyone knows, it's the Silver Age Hawkman, so he's Kadar Hall. And this is his first appearance. He's a police officer and scientist from Thanagar. And he becomes Carter Hall in Midway City. It also features the first appearance of Shayara Thal, a.k.a. Hawk Girl, and a few other people that are important to Hawkman's story. And let's see, and he fights. Now see, normally I don't like Joe Kubert art, but in the 60s, Joe Kubert art was actually really good. I don't know about you, but this is some pretty tight artwork. Yeah. And we see Hawkman and Hawk Girl using giant maces. Well, no, wait. Yeah, mace on a chain. To take out a giant lizard monster thing at a tunnel with a toll booth and tons of cars. And it actually looks really cool. Of course, remember, Joe Kubert was younger then. And then finally, this month, we had Detective Comics. Oh, by the way, this is December 1960. I forgot to mention that. I'll go back and edit that in. This is December 1960. Okay. And then we have Batman and Robin facing the menace of the multiple creature.
Multiple creature.
Well, yeah. And also this issue, because he's still a backup feature, Manhunt, the Martian Manhunter faces the case of the Honest Swindler. Yes, I know. You don't understand how that works. Me either.
Yeah, me neither.
But we don't have Detective Comics, so we can't tell you how that works out. Okay, so what we're going to do is take a real quick break, play a couple promos, possibly ours, and come back with you for the next issue, Justice League number 4.
I'm Isaac.
I'm Adam.
For the latest news and rumors for all things DCU, listen to the world's best podcast. And remember,
stay super.
Rocketed as a being from the exploding planet Krypton, Kal-El grew to manhood on Earth, whose yellow sun and lighter gravity gave him fantastic superpowers. In the city of Metropolis, he poses as TV newsman Clark Kent, but battles evil all over Earth and beyond as Superman. Superman in the Bronze Age is a bi-weekly podcast following Superman's adventures from 1970 to 1986. Follow along at supermaninthebronzeage.blogspot.com and superbronze1970.libsyn.com.
In the city of Metropolis, Clark Kent appears to be a mild-mannered reporter for the Daily Planet. Unknown to the world, he's also Superman, fighting a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way. But before there was Metropolis, there was Smallville. Before there was Lois Lane, there was Lana Lang. Before he was Superman, he had adventures as Superboy. Dave's Amazing World of Superman presents The Smallville Chronicles, a Superboy podcast, a weekly look at the adventures of Superman when he was a boy, featuring an issue-by-issue look at the pages of Superboy from his appearances in Adventure Comics and his own title. Find it weekly at AmazingWorldOfSuperman.com.
Well, and we're back with Justice League of America number 4, which had a cover price of 10 cents.
Oh, man.
I know. I wish we could get it for a dime. The cover date on this was May 1961, and the release date was February 23rd, 1961. The title of this story is Doom of the Star Diamond, written by Gardner Fox, penciled by Mike Sikowski, inked by Bernard Sachs, and editor is Julie Schwartz. And I am going to go through the Justice League roll call, because one of us should do that. Justice League roll call for this issue is Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Flash, Jean Jones, Batman, Aquaman, Snapper Carr, and Superman. And including for the first time, well, you can probably tell because I'm going to post the cover, but this issue introduces Green Arrow to the Justice League, because back in these days, they like to spoil these kinds of things both on the cover and on the splash page. Yay!
Yeah.
Okay, so our story begins several trillion miles away from Earth, and an alien ship is hiding out in a black nebulous cloud, and it shoots at another ship that's approaching and destroys it. But the pilot, whose name is Carthan, appears to have survived. So they bring him on board with something called a snatch beam. I'm just going to let that one go.
Yeah.
And they find out that Carthan was not injured at all. Carthan comes to and is stunned to discover that his attacker is Xandor, who is the ruler of his planet, Dryanna. Oh, Dryanna, oh, won't you dry for me? Anyway, which is also Carthan's home planet, which I just said. So they have a little conversation, and we learn that Carthan has been going around conquering Dryanna's enemies and has become very popular to the point where Xandor believes that the people of Dryanna have decided to revolt and are going to try to get Carthan to lead the charge to overthrow Xandor and establish basically what we refer to as a democracy. So Xandor has decided that Carthan cannot return to Dryanna. He then has Carthan explain how he wasn't hurt, and Carthan explains that while he was investigating a barren planet, he was caught in an electromagnetic disturbance that actually looks more like comets. Actually, it also looks like giant red sperm. And these things...
Straight to the gutter.
Yes, in a code-approved comic, folks. So it was an electromagnetic disturbance that left him surrounded by some kind of invisible aura that protects him from all harm, apparently. So Xandor decides that he's going to exile Carthan to Earth, because Earth, at this point, remember it's 1961, does not have space travel yet, and is far enough away that he won't be able to use his telepathy powers to call for help, because they forgot to mention that he has that up until this point. So they're also going to send three golden machines covered with metallic coverings to Earth with Carthan. And Xandor explains that if Carthan tries to leave Earth, the machines will cover Carthan's aura, which they didn't know about until like 3 minutes ago, so the fact that this works is very convenient, will cover his aura so that he won't be able to see anything. It's going to be covered in something called Opaqualux, which will, of course, leave him blind, so he won't be able to see his way home. If he removes the coverings, he will be able to leave, but these machines will be activated and will basically destroy all human life on Earth. And since Carthan is apparently some kind of humanitarian that conquers enemies, he's effectively going to be stuck on Earth. So Carthan's sent to Earth, and while he's on his trip there, he decides he's going to try studying the planet that he's being exiled to, and learns about this group of heroes called the Justice League. But for some reason, his aura prevents him from asking them for help. So he comes up with this plan to make it look like he's a bad guy, and he's going to uncover the machines, forcing the heroes to find a way to deactivate them so he can leave Earth. So, meanwhile, in their secret sanctuary, the Justice League hold a meeting to admit a new member to the team. Flash nominates Adam Strange, told you he was mentioned, which makes sense because Barry Allen's a scientist and Adam Strange is basically a scientist too. Green Lantern nominates Green Arrow because they're both green. And Batman nominates Hawkman because he's a new guy that just recently appeared in Midway City, and what better way to, you know, help build publicity than to mention him in Justice League. So after an hour of what they really make a point to point out is friendly argument, the Justice League decide that they're going to bring Green Arrow onto the team. Before they can do anything like get in touch with Green Arrow, a metallic-looking arrow hits the table that they're meeting at. And Carthan starts talking to them through it, telling them that he's kidnapped Green Arrow, and he plans to conquer Earth using the golden machines. So he challenges the heroes to take them out, if they can. So once the message ends, the heroes decide to split up, with Superman and Batman searching for Carthan, therefore keeping them away from the story as much as possible, Wonder Woman and Martian Manhunter heading out to take out the machine in Keystone City, Flash and Aquaman heading to Australia, and Green Lantern heading all by himself to Rome, and Snap Ricard to sit down and snap. Thank you.
He's such a moron. I hate his guts. Go ahead.
Well, he's hardly even in this one. So first up, we have Wonder Woman and Martian Manhunter, and they find that their path is blocked by giant bugs. And we learn that these bugs were enlarged by the golden machine that's in the area. So while Wonder Woman flies around in her plane doing really nothing except explaining that the bugs are huge. Manhunter fights against these bugs, and he's actually doing pretty good until some bugs covered in sap basically trap him in the sap, and he lands on the ground with a thud, and a firefly, which normally is, as it explained, gives off a cold light from its tail, but apparently when you make it huge, that cold light has still got enough warmth to burn like dry leaves. So, as we know, Martian Manhunter is weakened by fire, so he's stuck on the ground. Meanwhile, Wonder Woman is being attacked by giant cats, because that makes sense with all the bugs. The giant cats attack the plane, so she jumps from her plane in time to be caught by a giant hawk. Fortunately, she's able to use her lasso to grab Martian Manhunter, whisking him away from the fire so he gets his strength back, gets the sap off of him somehow, because they don't mention that, takes out the hawk. When they get to the Golden Machine, they try to disable it and find that it's missing its handle, and Wonder Woman makes the obvious leap in logic that somehow the handle has been shifted to another dimension. So Wonder Woman uses her lasso to find the handle, and she's able to turn the machine off, restoring everything back to normal, and they head off to try to meet up with Batman and Superman to find Carthan. Out in Australia, Flash and Aquaman discover that the local Golden Machine is causing the continent to sink into the ocean. So Flash runs around the continent at super speed, using his super speed vibrations to make a wall around the continent to keep the water from flooding it. Meanwhile, Aquaman swims down and finds the machine, but also discovers that really nothing alive is able to get close to it due to its repelling vibrations. So, using his ability to telepathically communicate with these sea creatures, Aquaman has them create a net of seaweed and several other pieces of non-living underwater stuff to bring the machine to the surface so Flash can check it out. On the surface, Flash is able to create vibrations to counter the repelling vibrations of the machine, and Aquaman is able to get near it so that he can pull the handle and turn it off. Then the two heroes go to meet up with the others to find Carthan. In Italy, the Golden Machine there has caused some giant golden statues that were created for a science fiction movie to come to life. Of course, they're gold, so Green Lantern's ring has no effect to them. So he contributes to our lack of trees in the world by using his ring to cut down what looks to be an entire forest to create enough sawdust to cover the statues in so that he can actually affect them with his ring. He then causes the wood to petrify so that basically they become like they are golden statues. During this time, he finds the Golden Machine, but the handle is... Well, first of all, the machine's golden, so he can't use the ring to turn it off. Second, when he tries to turn it off, he finds that the handle is electrified, and it's actually affecting him because his feet are touching the ground, so he's grounded. So he decides that instead of just using his ring to float off the ground, which would be the simple thing, we need to take up more panel space. So he uses his ring to create a green shovel and digs the dirt out under his feet so that he's floating and therefore he's not grounded, so he's able to pull the handle and turn it off. So then he meets up with all the heroes. While they're all trying to get together, Superman and Batman are looking for Carthan, and Superman spots his invisible spaceship with his supervision and drills through the side with Batman following behind. They find Green Arrow inside, but he's surrounded by colorful deadly rays. They, of course, don't affect Superman, so he passes through them, and then they have to realize how are they going to get Green Arrow out without him frying. So, instead of using Superman's cape, which would be the simple and obvious choice, Superman decides to use some of the lead shielding from the flooring of the cage to build a hollow egg so that Green Arrow can get into it and Superman can carry him out that way. Outside, the rest of the Justice League regroup, and Martian Manhunter... Martian Vision also is able to find the ship, and when they enter through the hole that Superman created, they are entrapped inside a bubble that turns into a giant diamond. Now this diamond is really a cool diamond because it not only is it a diamond, so no one, you know, they can't really break out, but it has tiny flames in it, so Martian Manhunter's weakened. And it has golden, of course, it has golden flakes in it, rendering Green Lantern's ring useless. Useless? Yeah, it's old. Rendering GL's ring useless. And then Superman tries to save them, but apparently there's also kryptonite in the diamond, so he's all weak. So Batman decides he's going to tackle Carthan before he can get away. Now, for some reason, this actually hurts Carthan because apparently his aura is not protecting him anymore. So because of that, he is now able to tell the Justice League exactly what's going on and ask for help. He relates his whole story about how he's trapped on Earth, and when he goes to try to free the other heroes from the giant diamond, he realizes that when Batman tackled him, he tackled him into the diamond's controls, so he can't do anything. So Green Arrow decides that there's a way that he can save the day. He just needs to find the diamond's stress point. And apparently it can take months to study this, but Carthan has already done the work and points out exactly where the stress point is. So using a diamond-tipped arrow, Green Arrow lets it fly and hits the stress point perfectly, and it shatters the diamond without hurting anyone inside. So quickly, the heroes repair Carthan's ship, and he heads back off to Xandor, So the heroes help Carthan repair his ship, and he's able to return home to take care of Xandor. And the JLA return to their secret sanctuary, welcome Green Arrow to the team, and tell Snapper all about their adventures so that he can record them in the meeting minutes book.
And so that they can all vote.
Well, yeah. And so that Snapper can just sit there and be like, wow, you guys are cool. Now some things I wanted to point out here, if you don't mind me going first. The machines, I thought it was pretty convenient that there's three of them, so it causes the team to split up into three groups like they normally do. And it's also convenient that these machines are able to not only stop Carthan, but also work around his aura that they didn't know about when they brought the machines on board in the first place. Wonder Woman and Martian Manhunter go to take care of a golden machine in Keystone City. Now, keen comic book fans should realize that Keystone City is home of Jay Garrick, the Golden Age Flash, which should be a city that only exists on Earth 2. I'm going to let that slide in this instance, because this issue came out about 5 months before Earth 2 was introduced. So it's possible that either there was some confusion about where Flash lives, or they just hadn't decided yet that Keystone City was only a town that would be on Earth 2 and not on Earth 1. In any event, apparently there is a Keystone City on Earth 1. I thought it was cool when they're breaking up into teams, Wonder Woman actually references that she and Martian Manhunter hadn't teamed up since they battled Starro, so she thought it would be a good idea if they teamed up this time. I thought that was pretty interesting. I like how when Aquaman and Flash are heading to Australia, basically Aquaman's riding inside of a shell, and Flash is, you know, pushing on his shoulders, but is moving him at super speed, so the shell is basically kind of riding the waves like a surfboard does, I guess. Although surfboard actually doesn't ride the wave the same way. But anyway, he's able to basically, you know, glide across the water instead of sinking, while Flash is running fast enough to run on the water. And I kind of made that sound really boring, but that was really cool if you saw it. Carthan's aura never gets explained, though, which was annoying. We kind of know how he gets it, but we don't know why it prevents him from contacting the Justice League, and then we don't know why it disappears suddenly. I do have a theory, though, because if you notice, every time that the aura protects Carthan, he's being shot at by like energy blasts or some kind of cannons. but the first time he gets a physical attack on his person by another human-type creature, such as, say, Batman, suddenly the aura stops working. So I'm wondering if that had something to do with it. But see, in an era where they explain everything, that's not explained, which was kind of annoying.
Yeah, it was excessive.
Yeah. And then this one, I thought it was interesting. While fighting the giant bugs, Martian Manhunter gets a thought bubble, which explains that the machine must have caused all the creatures around here to turn large. But apparently it doesn't affect humans. Forgetting, of course, that he's a Martian, and that has nothing to do with him, apparently it also doesn't affect Martians either. He completely forgets that and doesn't mention that. I just thought I'd point that out because, you know, he's not a human. Overall, though, I thought this was a fun read, and while I didn't think the art was great, I thought it was actually a little bit better than the previous issue, and I thought it told the story pretty well. How about you?
You know, you covered a lot of stuff that I was thinking. There was a bit of exposition in there that you're like, really? But I mean, if you look at the letters to the editor, a lot of them are like, my kids love this, you know, so you really kind of have to separate yourself from that and kind of cut them some slack.
Oh yeah.
But I'm not going to, so it sucked. No. you know, two things I thought of when I read this, the two things that stood out were Green Arrow. I love Green Arrow. He's awesome. They've taken Robin Hood and turned him into a superhero, and essentially made him look like a blonde Errol Flynn. If anyone knows who that is, kudos for knowing good pop culture references. And he is awesome. I love how you have someone that's like similar to Batman, but he's awesome with arrows, you know? And of course that expands into a little bit more ridiculousness. And so it was nice seeing him on the team, you know?
Yes, it is cool.
And the other thing I kept thinking of throughout the whole thing was, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Because of the bugs, right?
Yeah. I don't have much else to add besides that, but I was kind of hoping that I'd see a gigantic oatmeal cream pie that they would all get to partake of at the end. But that didn't quite happen, and so I was a little disappointed. But I agree with you. It was a fun read. The artwork, I thought, was good, better than the previous issue. And I think there was a bit – I think the artwork was a little bit more, you know, highlighted. So, you know, I like this one. It was a fun read. I don't like Snapper Carr. I think he's stupid and pointless. I think if they're trying to make some sort of connection with the human characters or with humans that read the comic book, I'm not sure what they were trying to do with that character. Maybe they're trying to have someone that was depowered that could be like, yeah, like a Jimmy Olsen type. Because that's essentially what he is.
He's a Jimmy Olsen that snaps his fingers, yeah.
Yeah, he's a Jimmy Olsen that snaps his fingers, and he's just about as helpful as Jimmy Olsen is, which is not really. So, you know, it was a good one. To me, it was more enjoyable one, especially since it was a nice intro for Green Arrow. So, I mean, yes. I liked it quite a bit. But again, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, you know, I was thinking Bulbers, oatmeal cream pies, you know. Gigantic cigarettes being flicked at him or something like that.
There was one thing you mentioned about how he's a lot like Batman. Considering that when he was basically created, he was basically a clone of Batman at first. You know, because he's got an Arrow cave, an Arrow car, an Arrow plane. He had a sidekick. Well, he still does at this point. He has a sidekick. So it's, other than the fact that he uses a bow and arrow, and instead of, you know, bat gadgets, he's got trick arrows. So it seems like what they've done is they've brought him on the team. So now they've got a different kind of Superman and a different kind of Batman, so that they don't have to use the main ones and can kind of try to focus on the others. Will they do that? I don't know. But it seems kind of interesting that they've basically got a pseudo Batman and a pseudo Superman now, when they've been trying not to use Batman and Superman so far in these books.
It's, yeah, I think I would call him the long range Batman. If Batman is the skirmish warrior, then he is the literally the bow and arrow. He's the ballista of the Justice League. So, he's a long range Batman. So, which I think they do a good enough job differentiating him. Martian Manhunter is just green and from Mars, and his weakness is fire and not kryptonite. I mean, put him on another planet and make his weakness kryptonite. He's Superman. You know, at least the Green Arrow, he's got the bow and arrow thing. He's got the Robin Hood kind of look, you know?
So, yeah, and he's going to become less like Batman later on when he gets the goatee and changes his outfit. But for at this point, he is kind of like Batman Light with a bow and arrow, which is cool. I'm not saying it's bad. I still like this version of Green Arrow, too. It takes a little getting used to seeing him with bright red boots and bright red gloves. But, And he looks so young without the goatee. It's so weird.
Yeah, and I like the simplicity of the costume too. You know, it's nice. That would make for a good Halloween costume if someone wanted to like go on the cheap and do something a little bit simpler.
Yeah, that would be a lot easier than the one that they've got in the these days. But even later on in the 70s, it's a lot easier than dealing with that, and you don't have to worry about the fake goatee.
Yeah.
Let's see. Now we don't really have much for ads this time because our copy of the book this time has no ads. Sorry. But, and this issue was reprinted, and I forgot to mention last time. Shoot. Okay, well, I'm going to mention it here, and then hopefully I'll remember and can put it back at the other part. Okay, Justice League number 3 was reprinted in Justice League of America number 48, which had a November-December 1966 cover date. DC Special Blue Ribbon Digest number 15 from November 1981. Justice League of America Archives Volume 1 Hardcover from 1982. And Showcase Presents Justice League of America Volume 1 Trade Paperback from 2006. Okay, now this story was reprinted more. Justice League number 4 has been reprinted more times than even Justice League number 3. It was reprinted in Justice League of America number 67, which had a November-December 1968 cover date. They seem to do a lot of reprintings right around November-December, if you notice that.
Yeah.
And by the way, that cover has a really cool Neil Adams cover. And he does a really cool rendition of this version of Green Arrow, which is ironic since he's the one that redesigned Green Arrow with the goatee later on. Anyway, it's a pretty nice looking cover. Justice League of America Archives Volume 1 from 92, which we mentioned earlier. World's Best Comics Silver Age Sampler Number 1 from 2004. Showcase Presents Justice League of America Volume 1 Trade Paperback from 2006. Showcase Presents Green Arrow Volume 1 Trade Paperback also from 2006. And Justice League of America Hereby Elects, which was a trade paperback from 2007. And that, of course, had the stories that first introduced several characters, such as Green Arrow, Hawkman, Zatanna. But anyway.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
I guess finally for this month, or for this episode, we have the books that came out in February of 61. The Justice League-related books. First up, we had Superman 144. In which we see Superman and Supergirl and Krypto watch Earth blow up, basically, as they become the orphans of space, which is pretty interesting. Let's see. And for some reason, they put it in this book instead of Superboy's book. They have Superboy's first public appearance. So that's pretty weird. And my back, but there it is. We have Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane number 24, which is not an imaginary story this time. And we learned that apparently the UNIVAC computer discovers that the perfect husband for Lois Lane, she thinks it's Superman, but it turns out it has picked Clark Kent. And isn't it ironic that they are the same person, but no one knows that? By the way, that's a great cover by Kurt Swan. I actually like that a little bit better than the Earth blowing up one, but I like that one. We have Wonder Woman number 121, and for the first time, the entire Wonder Woman family faces off against the Island Eater. We have Superboy number 88. and the amazing role of the invader from Earth. Well, that's backwards. These are some ugly-looking aliens, but apparently they're in school taking notes about how their world is in danger from an alien being. So that's kind of interesting. Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, number 152. Jimmy Olsen becomes Wolfman. And not the radio announcer Wolfman Jack, because that would be not right. Batman, number 139, featuring the first appearance of Batgirl. Not the one you know. This is, what's it, Betty Kane? Let's see. Yep. Hey, got the hang of that. Betty Kane, it's her first appearance as Bat-Girl. And she was brought in to be a love interest for Robin to make sure that no one thought he was gay, the way that the people thought that Batman was also gay, but he's got Batwoman. So, anyway, not that being gay is bad. Next up is Action Comics number 275, as Brainiac exposes Superman to the menace of red and green kryptonite. And do you know what that does? It creates a third eye on the back of Superman's head. Figuring that the new disfigurement could expose his secret identity, Superman leads the public to believe the mineral gave him the impulse to wear different hats and act differently. That way he can still wear his hat when he's Clark Kent and no one would think anything's different. But of course, apparently somehow the third eye also increases the power of his heat ray vision, of his heat vision, so he's able to get rid of Brainiac. And then, of course, Mom and Pa adopt Supergirl. And that's just an imaginary dream story, so that's okay. Adventure Comics number 283, featuring the Phantom Superboy.
Like a Casper and Superboy.
What's up?
It's like a Casper Superboy. He's all pale and stuff.
I know, it's pale and you can see through him. But the,
the first thing he does on the cover, he's like, I'm going to try to reach out for
something. I'm going to reach right through Pa. I see.
Materializes. Pa Kent's heart stops immediately.
Well, yeah, but it's okay. Door closed. But it's okay because Ma Kent's got a really cool hat. Oh, that's interesting. If you look, they have these this little equipment, a little gun, a scuba mask, the Phantom Zone projector. Because that's what everyone, you know, swims with a Phantom Zone projector. Why not?
Exactly.
Brave and the Bold 35 features the second adventure of Hawkman, featuring against the Valley of Vanishing Men, and also the Matter Master.
Ooh.
It also has Wonder Girl. Yeah, Hawk Girl. That's pretty cool. And finally for this month, Detective Comics number 290, featuring Batman and Robin's robot. And hopefully pretty
who
soon.
Who is body slamming Batman?
He looks like he's about to perform a Bane move, too.
All he needs is some antenna, and he looks like a Cyberman from Doctor Who.
Totally. That's exactly. Actually, you're right. Yeah, he's a little kid, but he's holding Batman up over his head. I could just hear him, I will simply break you.
Apparently, he's having a hard time holding him because there's all these shake lines. Like, oh, man, you're kind of fat, Batman.
Well, you know, Batman's not just going to lay there. But, yeah, it's like, I am strong, but not that strong. And then, of course, Martian Manhunter also faces lights, camera, and doom. And that's it for the month.
Hey, guys. Charlie here with some sad news. This is going to be the last episode of Podcast of Justice for a while. Since we started the show, our schedules have gotten pretty hectic. I no longer have time to do the editing and note-taking that the show requires, and neither does Isaac. Therefore, we've decided to put the show on an indefinite hiatus for now. On behalf of Isaac and myself, I want to thank everyone for downloading and supporting the show. We would also like to thank all of our podcast friends who helped to promote the show. And while the show is going away for a while, you can still catch us on our other shows. Isaac teams up with Adam Bascano for World's Best Podcast, which can be found at tinmanfrisbee.podbean.com. My show is Superman of the Bronze Age, which I co-host with J. David Weider, which can be found at supermanofthebronzeage.blogspot.com and superbronze1970.libsyn.com. And I'm also an occasional co-host on Thrilling Adventures of Superman, which can be found at greatkrypton.com. And all these shows are also available on iTunes. Episodes are posted at supermanhomepage.com, and we have Facebook pages. So I want to thank you all again for listening, and we'll see you guys around the spinner rack.